My name's Mike, I'm an addict. Spiritual awakening, don't know about that. I know something's awakened though. The first meeting here, I'd done the first 15-minute chair, and I remember, you know, doing the chair, and I was thinking, you know, I should be doing the 40-minute chair. And they told me, don't trust my thinking, you know, because I'm up here now doing the 40-minute chair, and I'd want to be doing the 15-minute chair. So, I was also going to, you know, I've done a few chairs, and but this one, I seemed to be really nervous, and I thought, oh, you know, I'll write a few notes, and I'll do this, and I've done about a million chairs in my head over the course of the last few weeks, and I haven't wrote any notes, but then someone's given me a card with a serenity prayer on it, and, you know, I'm looking at the five-year chip, and it says self, God, society, service, goodwill and freedom, you know, so that kind of, you know, gives me guidelines to, you know, to talk about. I also asked Roz if she had any Valium as well about half hour ago. Because that'd take the edge off it, and I'd be pretty cool, and I'd be able to talk and tell a few jokes, and, you know, and not care what you think anyway. Give up smoking a year ago, and oh, that's a silly idea. I could have gone out and had a fag as well. Is there any newcomers in the room? Welcome, you know, is there anyone at their first meeting? Welcome, you know. I might, you know, my experience, I first come to my first meeting, I heard someone talking and I didn't have a clue what they were talking about. I really didn't. I heard certain words that I kind of, you know, heard before, and I heard a lot of words that I'd never heard before as well. You know, and you know, kind of concepts and practices that we do here that I just, you know, just it didn't register. You know, I come in here and and I couldn't stop using drugs. You know, I just could not stop using drugs. You know, so there's three of you newcomers that put their hand up. You know, I'm talking for you three. The others, you know, there's another 180 meetings a week in London. You know, you can go there. But, you know, you three people, you know, I believe it's my purpose today to talk to you three. And so I put a bit more pressure on myself then. Whew. I'm definitely alive, that's for sure. Yeah, you know, I come in and I couldn't stop using drugs, and I couldn't see how coming to a meeting and people talking, you know, about their experience, strength and hope, and, you know, it didn't register. How's that going to help me stop using and stay stopped? How's it, you know, what happened, you know, over my journey is, firstly, I'd also, you know, get out of self for a second. I want to thank Ali as well. You know, and as she was talking, I was thinking, you know, I need to be honest, I was thinking, I hope she doesn't do a good chair. And she did, and I thought, what a liberty. Because now I've got to follow that, do you know what I mean? It's like, just my luck. But yeah, you know, I come in here because I had a drug problem. You know, and my drug problem was my living problem. You know, it consumed every area of my life. You know, I didn't use on Saturday nights. You know, I just used, continuously used for years and years and years and years. You know, for me, you know, before I started doing some written work, what we call the steps, I thought some of my using was good. You know, because I've got a, you know, a mechanism that puts me in denial and paints things up. You know, maybe the backdrop was good and there was a few colourful characters sometimes, and, you know, there was a sun shining and there might have been a few hammocks and a few palm trees sometimes. But if it was that great, why did I have to use so much? You know, if my life was that great, why was I stoned all the time? And so that's kind of a revelation that I've learned. You know, I thought that you know, I got into changing the way I felt at a very young age, and then I found, you know, substances as well, you know, at the age of 10 or 11, solvents, and away I went. You know, I never used, you know, controllably. You know, I never used with any amount of control. The way I used, whatever I was using, was out of control. So you know, I come here and I heard, probably not, you know, probably about the 50th meeting I went to, I heard, like, you know, we admit that we're powerless and our lives have become unmanageable. And, you know, the word powerlessness and unmanageable, you know, didn't really ring home, but, you know, you're allowed to swear in this meeting. Yeah. Let's go. They give you cards at certain, you know, conventions saying no profanities and stuff like that. But, you know, so in a nutshell, I didn't understand that my life was, you know, that we were powerless and our lives were unmanageable. What I understood was that I couldn't stop using and my life was fucked. You know, I understood that. You know, my life was in chaos. It wasn't my plan. You know, when I was... I look around, there's, you know, quite a lot of people my age, you know, so they understand, you know, whether you was doing it up north in Scotland or around the M25, stood on top of a speaker with your hands in the air shouting mental. You know, that, you know, 15 years later, I'd be in St. Martin's shitting myself, talking about standing on top of a speaker with my hands in the air shouting mental. You know, and... So I never foresee, you know, I always say this as well, you know, that kind of scene and that kind of part of my life, it was a bit like one of our readings, you know, it didn't matter what colour, what religion, what sexual, you know, it didn't matter, you know, as long as you had a knee down your throat and your hands in the air shouting mental, you was all right. But what I didn't know then was that I had a disease that was progressive, you know, and even if I tried to stop, which I didn't, what I now know is, without this, I wouldn't have been able to stop. Because I tried, you know. I went to doctors and they go, yeah, you've got a drug problem. And then they get the script out and give me more drugs to deal with my drug problem. You know, or I go to a rehab and they go, you've got a drug problem. But what you can do is drink 20 units of alcohol a week. And even then, in my insanity, you know, that I thought it was about a couple of certain drugs at that point, you know. But even in my sanity, I said to him, if I can control anything, what am I doing here? I knew what I was doing. I was on a prison swerve, actually. But, you know, I kind of knew that, you know, trying to control my using was insane. It wasn't something that I could do. You know, I tried, you know, negotiating how I use, you know, I'll just do it like this, you know, it's like coming up to Christmas, and I remember about 7-8 Christmases ago or something, and you know, it was like, the dealer said, look, I'm on till 10 o'clock Christmas morning, and then the phone's off. So I had a right load up Christmas Eve. And, you know, my girlfriend at the time, she's from this little village out in Kent by Leeds Castle, where there's like little, like, koi carp in the ponds and, you know, this, that and the other. And I'm like 8 stone, skinny, my arse hanging out my jeans. You know, at the time I was using a lot of silver foil to do what I was doing. So I always had like dark marks across my cheeks and over my face and you know. So, my idea of control was to buy like X amount of drugs and go down to the countryside. And so what happened is, you know, I controlled locking myself in her bedroom and doing all the drugs, which was supposed to last me till, you know, I don't know, at least the 27th or the 28th, so I can come back down to London. Next thing, so I'm in this rural, I'm trying to paint a picture in this rural kind of little village out in Kent, and the next thing I know, I'm getting an elbow in my ribs. I'm in this other family's house now, like straight goers. I've opened my eyes, and I've got a Brussels sprout there, a bit of turkey stuck there, and filled with just shame. So what that, you know, kind of that shame, it just pushed me more, you know. It was, you know, I shouldn't have been here anyway. I blame people all the time. You know, if you wouldn't have brought me down here, it wouldn't have happened. Well, that's obvious, but I did go there myself, you know. No one dragged me there. And 5 years ago, I was in detox this time. And just to, you know, get it out of the way, I celebrate 5 years, you know, clean and in recovery this weekend, you know. And you know, and that's when, you know, this life has started. I'm just going to paint one picture of my, you know, total powerlessness and unmanageability. You know, I used to hit up a lot of cocaine in a needle, and so I've done it one day, and, you know, my denial system, I used to always go into psychosis and jump out of windows or call police because people were trying to kill me or, you know, whatever. And so this time I've gone out of a window, I've severed my thumb. And they put me in hospital, and next day I've gone into the theatre. I've woken up at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And it took me half an hour, 30 minutes, to call my dealer, meet her down in the A&E in the UCH, find someone to hold the pipe, because my hand was all... And I was smoking crack again. It took me 30 minutes. You know, nothing stopped me from using. Absolutely nothing stopped me from using. And I haven't used for 5 years because of this program. You know, and for myself, you know, as the picture I've painted, you know, I had a lot of rock bottoms along the way, a lot of physical rock bottoms because of the way I was living and the way I was using. You know, I'd be underweight, I'd have, you know, abscesses and scabs and, you know, completely, you know, out of control. So I had a lot of physical rock bottoms, I had a lot of mental rock bottoms, you know, girlfriends left me, parents shut the door on my face, you know, the stress of using was too, you know, so I had a lot of mental rock bottoms along the way as well. But what happened to me was I had a spiritual rock bottom. And I had a spiritual rock bottom about 5 years and 2 months ago. And I come back into these rooms and A friend of ours died, you know, Rod died. He went out and relapsed, and within, you know, 3 days, he was found in his flat by his dad, dead. And yeah, there's this card here, and it's accepting hardships as the pathway to peace. And in that hardship, you know, my belief is, I don't believe, you know, Rod died in vain. You know, I really don't. You know, Rod helped me get clean through that process. And in that process, I'll be able to help other people in the 12 steps. You know, so... And that's what NA's also done is, you know, everything that happened in my life, it was a way of, just feeling sorry for myself. You know, I was always a victim. But NA's given me the ability to find something positive or just find something in every situation, you know, for growth. And so prayer's been a big thing for me. You know, just, you know, we say in here, fake it to make it, you know, and I've had to do that. You know, the last 5 years I've prayed every morning and every night. And I was also blessed as well. You know, I went into a place after detox, and it was a Christian place. And we're not a religious program here, but, you know, fortunately I went into this place, and you know, they gave me what I needed at the time, which was 3 meals a day, some clean sheets, and also, you know, more importantly, a bit of TLC as well. And that's where you know, my experience of, you know, Ali was talking about experiences with her son and stuff like that, you know, and, you know, my first experience of you know, God happened in that place. And what happened was my little nan died years and years ago, and I never, you know, grieved the death. And while I was there, my uncle passed away, and I went to the to the funeral, and I realised it was where we buried my little nan. And I've come back to the house, and, you know, all these feelings have come up, because I didn't feel anything. I either felt sick, which wasn't very often, or stoned, you know. And and these guys asked me, they said, you know, do you want to come and pray with us? And you know, I'm listening to the bells now, and you know, it's really apt, because, you know, we started praying in this room, and a presence come in the room. And what I truly believe is my little nan, she was there, and they had stopped praying, and I said, we can't leave now. I said, my little nan's in the room. And they said, well, do you want to go into prayer? And I started praying, and you know, I don't know where, I said, Nan, you can go and rest in peace now, because God's going to look after me. You know, I wasn't frightened, I was safe. And it's one of those moments, you know, the sun bursting in Brixton, you know. And I did, I you know, through my using, I lived in a few countries for a few years as well, and you know, there was temples and synagogues and mosques and all these other, and I always sought refuge in these little places of, you know, I don't know, peace and quiet or whatever. And you know, I believe totally that I've been carried, you know what I mean? That you know, and it kind of goes into my step three, you know. My understanding now, step three, is very simple. It's about acceptance. You know, I accept that I'm an addict. In fact, I'm very grateful, because without that, I wouldn't have the life I got today. I don't know, maybe I'd be down the market or doing a bit of tickets out and or whatever. You know, I wouldn't, you know, my life is not that I'm so, but my life is so full with joy and friendships. I'm trying to not look over this side, because a lot of my mates are over this side, you know, and you know, and that's what I try and practice. You know, this process, you know, as I said, you know, my using, I gave myself a hard time. I try not to now use this, the steps and the process of NA, to give myself a hard time. You know, I've gone to any lengths not to use. Absolutely, you know, I took that literally. You know, I've held on, I've acted out, I've, you know, eaten too much, had sex too much, shot too much, you know. I've done, you know, what I feel as in my acceptance I've had to do to stay clean and be able to work through that. And you know, I got a text off my sponsor today, and he's, you know, He's from where I'm from, and he speaks the sort of same language as I speak. And he said, you know, well done, boy, on your ching. A ching's a fiver, if you know, a five. And you know, and I learned to trust this man. He wasn't my first sponsor, you know, but, you know, I learned to trust this man. And I knew by the journey I'd been on before that I'd carried a lot of guilt and shame. And at this point as well, externally, you know, I was doing okay. And I was doing very well, actually. One of my dad's mates, you know, give me a, as we call, a leg up. And, externally, I was doing all right. And I was driving down to the West End, because I was working in the West End with my mum. And she said to me, Michael, I'm really proud of you. And she was talking about what I was doing externally. And, you know, I stopped the car, and I believe it was the first time since birth there was unconditional love. There wasn't an agenda there, and I just broke down. I just went. You know, didn't say anything. And I'm proud of myself as well. You know, I'm proud of myself as well. You know, so I started to work a step four, and I was fortunate as well. Two of my mates are in the room now, and you know, we talk about pain as can be a motivating factor in recovery. Also, pride for me can be a motivating factor in recovery, because I said to my mate, I said, "How are you doing with your step four?" He said, "I'm nearly finished." What? So I just got the pen and the pad, and I, you know, cracked right on, because I didn't want him to finish and me be left behind. And basically what that was is, you know, in that process of looking at my past, was for the first time, truly, I got compassion for Michael. I really did felt compassion, not reading it, just writing it and seeing all this stuff I'd been carrying around, and also for like family members that I'd resented as well. And you know, I don't come from a place of trust or you know, companionship, unless you've got a big bag of drugs. And you know, and I sat down with my sponsor, and you know, and this was a man that I'd learned to trust over the kind of 18 months or whatever it was beforehand we'd worked together. And and for the first time, you know, I really got honest with somebody else. You know, I remember like emptying my ex-girlfriend's cash point out again. You know, and she's come up, she's gone, "You've done it again." I swore blind I didn't. And she's gone, "Well, come to the bank." I said, "Yeah." It wasn't until, you know, I got right to the door of the bank, I went, "Well, actually, you know," I just couldn't tell the truth. I couldn't own anything. And, you know, and the real healthy part of amongst a few things in step five was me, for me, was to be able to, you know, actually own my wrongs, the exact nature of my wrongs. Which was terrifying for me, because I wanted to blame everyone else. It was my dad's fault because he was in prison for a long time. Or it was, you know, the doctor's fault because they give me drugs. Or it was, you know, it was the court's fault because they put, you know, it was always someone else's fault. And in that, I kind of come to see how, you know, my defects governed my life. Absolutely governed my life. They, you know, I don't know where you lot come from, but where I come from, you couldn't show you as afraid. You know, fear was something that the divs over the road showed, or the ones, the boffins that you nicked the dinner money off in school. You know, it wasn't, you know, it weren't in our vocabulary to show fear. And I'm shitting myself now, by the way. And that's what governed my life. You know, every action I'd done was governed on that. You know, either that, you know, I wasn't going to get enough, or I was going to lose what I've got, or you was going to find out that I was frightened, you know. And so, you know, this process, it's come to show me that, you know, by the grace of this program and God, that I don't have to be governed by that fear, you know. And also to embrace, you know, I'm frightened now, I'm fearful, but it's, you know, but despite that, I'm getting on with it, you know. And that's kind of common in my life. You know, what I do in my life now. You know, I come in here and I see the readings. And I was that insecure and that frightened that, you know, the Who is an Addict, which is about five lines, I couldn't read that in case I got a word wrong and you'd laugh at me. So I went home and practiced it and then come and got it. And, you know, and then, you know, the why Are We Here card, which is kind of, you know, a creamy yellow, depending if it was a smoking meeting or not, you know. And that was had a couple more lines on it, and I, you know, practice reading that, and, you know, practicing overcoming the fear. And this is what it's done for me, even in life. You know, I go into an environment, and despite the fear, I get on with it, we get on with it. Step eight for me is been the most amazing step for me. Actually, that's a lie. Step nine's been the most amazing step for me. Step eight has been the most hardest step. You know, I come in here and I heard people talk about step four. For me, step four, what, you know, step eight, because I'd done a thorough step five and I could see the exact nature of my wrongs, I could do a thorough step eight. You know, because step five, step four also, a lot of it was about blaming still. I resented him because he'd done that. I resented, you know, I resented my mum because she didn't divorce my dad. Because if they, you know, if they were divorced, I could have played them off each other and got love from them both separately. You know, and so step four was a lot about that. Not all of it, but a lot of it was. But step eight was actually, you know, made a list of persons that I'd harmed. Not had harmed me, that I'd harmed. And I found it difficult. You know, I found it so difficult to do that. But what I had was, you know, the faith in this program that, you know, I had people that, you know, that had come before me and had worked the steps and had worked the steps that told me, you know, it's all right. You know, I phoned someone up in this room, actually, and I said, have you made a direct amends to your mum? And he'd gone, no. And I thought, I'm just taking my mum out for a meal now. You know, and I took her out to our favourite restaurant that we've been going to for, I don't know, since my dad was working in the strip clubs in the 70s in Soho. And I took her and was sitting, and she kind of she doesn't understand what we do here, or what I do here, but she understands that every time the phone rings, she's not expecting it to be the police saying, will you come and identify your son's body, because we found him in a bin chute. And she knows that I come here, so that she makes the connection. You know, and so I'm sat down with her, and for me, I've done plenty of step nines. I've never said sorry in step nine. That was my favourite word when I was using. I'm sorry, I won't do it again. You know, I'm sorry about it, I won't do it again. Fucking hell, I've done it again. You know. And so I'm talking to her, and how I work step nines is I try and empathise with I'm using my mother as an example here, and I try to empathise how it must have felt for her living with me. And then I invite her in to tell me the truth about it. You know, and after we'd start, you know, after, you know, she'd finished speaking, she said, also, Mike, I want to tell you I'm really proud of you. and she wasn't talking about what I was doing externally. You know, and it's them doors going in Brixton moments. You know, she said, I used to be so ashamed of you. She said, but I tell everyone now you're an addict. Like I did in early days, if the bus driver wanted to listen, I'd tell him it's step one. Or the postman. Or anyone. You know, step nine has been such a beautiful step for me, you know, to be able to, you know, go and make amends for my life. Do you know what I mean? I haven't completed my step nine. It's very, you know, there's a few still to go. There's one particular one that I still struggle with around my nan and granddad and my aunties, you know. And I've nearly done it a few times. Nearly done it, you know. Go round there on you know, pretend I'm going round for a sandwich. They still live in Camden, you know. It's there, but, you know, I'm willing. I so want to do this because, you know, I know the payoff for it. You know, the payoff is that, you know, the peace of mind. You know, step 10 is something that I'm definitely practicing. You know, I'm definitely practicing, you know. I can't, there's a step 10 I need to make on Mavistock Hill. As people who know me, I get really kind of bent out of shape when we talk about football. And I was watching the football the other day in this calf in Mavistock Hill, and I was only Chelsea supporting them, and get all anxious just talking about it. And I'm watching it, I'm right at the front, and I'm watching it, and and the guy who owns the place is a Tottenham fan. And, you know, so I didn't even look behind me. There's two geezers have walked in, and they said to me, oh, what game you come to watch? I said, the Chelsea game. And they said, well, we're Tottenham fans. I said, so? Anyway, I'm getting built up when we're losing 1-0, and we brought it back to 1-1, and then we're losing 2-1, and we brought it back to 2-0, and then 3-2. 30 seconds before the game finished, they turned it over. I fucking let him have it, this geezer. What I didn't realise is, as I've turned and let him have it, the cat's full. So there's probably 20 people in there, and, you know, I've really... It actually felt quite good, if I'm honest, as I was walking away. Have visualisations of doing CFC over his, you know, the front of the shop. But, you know, I need to clear my side of the street, I really do, you know, and it ain't for him, do you know what I mean? It ain't for you lot, really. It's for me, you know. And, you know, I could justify, I think it's a fucking liberty, turning the football over with 30 seconds to go. But it doesn't, you know, justify my reaction. And that's what, you know, amongst other things, again, I've got is, you know, conscience, I've got an awareness of, you know, ignorance is bliss. You know, for the guys at their first meeting, you know, ignorance isn't in, you know, it's not there no more. It ruins your using. You know, it ruins your using, NA. You know, this awareness that we get here, you know, it can, not painful, but it can give lots of room for growth. And step 11 is about prayer and meditation and trying to find, you know, a deeper understanding of God that I don't understand. But what I, you know, briefly talk about meditation, you know, I can't sit still. Meditation, you know, that's for like people that live in India and, you know, yeah, wear sarongs and stuff like that and, you know, cross their legs and do yoga. It took me 2 years in recovery to go home and watch a movie on my own, let alone, you know, sit still. crazy concept, you know, meditation. I pray in the morning, it takes me about 10 seconds. I'm up, I do my reading, and then I'm gone. You know, the radio's on, the TV's on, this is on, that's on, the kettle's on, the toaster's on, everything's on, like, you know. Okay. But, you know, what I've been able to do of late, which for the people up in the Himalayas, that probably absolutely means nothing. For me, I can get up in the morning, I can pray, I can do my reading, and I can just sit still for about 30 seconds or a minute. You know, that's a lifetime for me. And then I might get up and get my bowl of, like, Otabix and not put the radio on for 5 minutes. Just eat my breakfast. And, you know, that's a fucking quantum leap for me. I don't know about you. Like, you know, I just couldn't sit still. And, you know, I believe that our step 12 is working if there's three people in here in their first meeting, you know. And we go, you know, we try and live our lives by these principles, you know, practice these principles. I like that, because that means to say, you know, because my recovery also has, you know, been a process of, you know, oh, God, I've done it again. 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 Oh, God, I've nearly done it again. You know, that's really been the process of my recovery, you know, and, you know, society, my neighbours, the chair of the Tenants Association, and he keeps on trying to rope me in, so I become the chair of the Tenants Association on my little tower block up on Primrose Hill. You know, I just wanted, you know, I was a fucking nightmare to live next door to. Absolute nightmare. You know, when I was in psychosis, I was running around trees with knives trying to stab shadows. You know. You know, and they wanted me to be the chair of the Tenants Association. And you know, my neighbour as well on the other side is, you know, this guy, and he's got two young kids and his wife, and he's on the brown, you know, and he knocked about, I don't know, a year ago, he's gone, do you want to borrow a pint of milk? Basically what he's saying is, can we talk for a little while? Because, you know, I'd seen him in the lift and I'd seen him pinned up, and I kind of said to him, oh, you use heroin, yeah? He's gone, no. I said, you definitely use heroin. And, you know, the power of example, I believe, you know, even in when I trip up, the power of example that, you know, we don't have to use. To say that just blows me away. We don't have to use. You know, I never knew a way to stop using. I never knew a way to stop hating myself, killing myself, you know, killing my family, you know, robbing from my family, you know, lying to them. You know, today, you know, I'm just going to tell this other story and then I'm going to wrap it up. You know, the last 5 years have been out of this world. It doesn't mean to say that it's been a fairy tale. There's been my dad tried to commit suicide, and really tried to commit suicide, and was sectioned off the back of it. And I said at the beginning about trying to find something out of every situation. In that situation, you know, for the first time, I was totally consistent. I said I'd go there. I went there. I said I'd go round and get me mum. I went and got me mum. I said I'd go and get some Kentucky for me dad. I'd go and get it and take it to him. You know, for the first time in my life, I was truly able to be the son I always wanted to be to my mum. Not because of me, because of this program. You know. Thank you.